With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. I've got 99 problems and my cackle isn't one.
I may fart rainbows, but that doesn't mean this unicorn has a horn.
Has been the illustrious art of the fart. I cannot handle it. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 224. I don't actually really know, but I'm so excited by a new guest to the People's Couch. You know her as a star. She's currently filming Ryan Murphy's American Crime Story, Impeachment, where she's playing the part of someone you may know as Madame Paula Jones. She is a Tony-winning actress. She currently stars on the hit CBS comedy Be Positive. She was also on Masters of Sex. I know her as the star of my floor in college when she was my freshman year. All right. It is none other than Annalee Ashford. Annalee, how are you?
Yay, I'm so happy I'm here. I love you. It's so good to see you. You look great, pal.
I mean, you. Thank you. I'm very dolled up in my Bruce Springsteen hoodie and a little chemise. This is my version. I told you, this is my version of black tie. This is as dressy as I get for recordings. Otherwise, I am in a gorgeous Target robe. Nothing better. Nothing better than COVID filming.
I love it. Nothing softer.
Nothing softer. Nothing cozier. I feel like we have to be comfortable when we deep dive all things.
Oh my God, you know, of course. It's like how you watch the show. You need to feel comfy, cozy, all things soft. Ready to focus.
Yes, I believe in a safe space in many ways, including in the gorge. It's now, unfortunately, this hoodie used to be like, you know how hoodies usually start as like a thick, nice material? It's so fucking thin. It's going to, God forbid, it rests in peace in the next wash. Like, I can't, I don't know what I would do without my Bruce Springsteen Wrecking Ball Tour hoodie. I would not survive.
You just keep wearing it and then you tell people it's vintage.
Oh my God, I should. I mean, at a certain point, that won't be a lie. It will become fact, which is like, so it's odd that we have still stayed spiritually mid-20s plus as others have grown older with time.
Oh.
We just stay. We stay in our state.
Yes, hello, in the magic state.
Which I'm super into. Wait, so we have to tell the AGs, we are recording this. It is like, I'm in New York. It is like dead of night in LA time. I cannot believe your dedication to the craft of Real Housewifery is like none other.
My husband last night was like, are you caught up? Are you ready to talk tomorrow morning? Which is amazing because we both watch. I'm so happy that he has joined me in my Bravo love. It's also, you know, I got a 4.5-year-old and
oh my God.
Was like, oh, he won't be awake. That'll be great. And sure enough, 5 minutes before we logged on, mama, oh, mommy. And we have like you know, it's crazy because the world is coming back now and both my husband and I are vaccinated. Jack is not. But obviously because he's too little. But it's, I don't know if you feel this way when things start to come back. I feel really overwhelmed. And I'm sure a lot of people feel that way too. Like we've been seeing a lot of people that we love in our life that are vaccinated, but I can't, my schedule feels really overwhelming to me. And part of it's because we were able to sort of like, I was already busy during the pandemic because I was working. I'm sure a lot of people feel this way, but there was really big lack of boundaries during the pandemic. Oh, we are available now because everybody's available. Remember we went through that period and then you started to create boundaries. But I feel like the pre-vaccine world is sort of still with us in terms of a work scenario. Like you're always available and you always got to make videos and the content and you know, so that's still happening, but now we're coming back to life. So I don't know. Are you tired? Have you been seeing a lot of people?
I haven't. I've been really kind of nervous about it just because of like underlying condition stuff and just being terrified. I mean, there is a level of trauma that we have all experienced that has come out and shown itself in different ways. Like the idea of going for a walk felt dangerous for a while, you know, the idea of getting groceries delivered or picking them up and like, how do I touch this box of whatever, you know, like, is this going to harm me? I think that, you know, trauma can come out in different ways, including our bodies, our souls, our minds. And when you bring in the professional expectations of that, it's a way that people can experience or communicate their own trauma is like trying to double down on things that they can do in a world in which so much has seemingly been taken away. And I think that there's going to be a little bit of a struggle as we, you know, as more and more people get vaccinated, we're both vaccinated, God bless. And as we start to figure out, okay, well, there are things I can now do and there are ways that I can ensure my safety as best I can. And then there are ways I need to protect myself differently. Like if someone is saying, okay, well, you're seemingly available, you have 19 things to do today, you have to figure out a way to continue to protect yourself. As we did against the virus, we need to figure out how to double down on protecting our spirits and souls.
Absolutely. You know, it's like, it's practice and getting used to it. And, it's just it's wild to just sort of like build up your social stamina again, you know what I mean? There's like in your spirit, you know, but on a positive note, we have felt, I really, when you talk about trauma, everybody had their own source of trauma. And sometimes because we both were in New York during the thick of during the peak, when we really lived in the epicenter during the time when nobody knew anything about the virus. So I do feel like I carry, I carry some trauma from being in the city at that time and having like a child that we couldn't walk outside with. You know, I remember telling people in LA, like, I showed them a picture of me making a mask, and it was such a big deal that I got fabric and then I had a sewing machine. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is the first day we went outside. And they were like, that's the first day you went outside. And I was like, yeah, because we live in an apartment building and I could go out. I could go outside for the family because I had an N95 mask and people gave me dirty looks for having it, but we had had it before. I had bought it a long time before and had it for a plane ride when I was sick. And, that's how I got groceries and took groceries to another friend's. Like, I had a friend who was going through chemo. We brought her groceries, and another friend who had got COVID. We brought him groceries. And it was like, my little boy could not walk outside because we don't have an outdoor space. And we live on top of our neighbors, and we lived on top of a bodega. So just sort of explaining that to people in different parts of the country, like, sometimes it would make me grouchy that they didn't understand that, but I have so much more compassion because they were experiencing their own type of trauma, even though they could go outside and like sit out on their patio probably, or walk outside their front door, and we couldn't. You know, everybody had their own trauma in that time. And that's, I'm trying to like be really loving towards that. And also like just do a better job of planning my days. So that's why we're meeting at 7 a.m.
And I love that it's not my 7 a.m. It is my 10 a.m., which is a spiritual 7 a.m.
Fabulous.
Which I'm very into. Yeah, I think that there is a bond that unites New Yorkers, especially for those of us who were here during the peak. Like the first 2 months I didn't go outside. Like, no. It was me, my beloved angel roommate, the love of my life. And we just kind of buckled down. Like, she was able to go out, and it was a very, very stressful time that has had waves of after effect and kind of like the aftershock of it all. But I think it also lends itself a level of appreciation. Like, there was a point when I started to go for walks where I was like, wow, it felt like the Wild West. Like, there was not, it, New York.
It was wild. It was wild.
And it was surprising, honestly, because I was like, where am I? But now, I mean, listen, I die for a long walk followed by a ferry, because yes. I'm so far east. I'm like right by the Yorkville ferry stop. And I go for a long walk. I stop by my beloved Pippin Vintage. I tried on an emerald diamond situation dinner ring the other day, shooting the shit, going for seeing my favorite shopkeepers, grabbing takeout from my favorite restaurants who are in it to win it. You know, one of my favorite vegan places was closed for several months, reopened, new menu, new pasta, new things. And it's, you know, you're just so grateful. I'm grateful to have these moments. And guys, I really, you know, recommend supporting your local businesses wherever you live. They need your support. And if they have survived this far, trust me when I say, please, if you can, double down.
Amen.
Because they're all, you know,
we're still supporting. We still, even though we've been in LA for almost a year now, we still support our favorite local businesses on our favorite strip in our old neighborhood in Brooklyn, just because we were there. I mean, I remember drinking so much on a Sunday afternoon when bars started like selling cocktails at their windows. Mm-hmm. I drank like 10 cocktails and I didn't drink them all. I like was like drinking by the time after my third cocktail, I looked at Joe and was like, I'm wasted. I'm just going to drink half and then just to buy them from people, you know, because we were going through that phase.
Oh, I love that.
Which was also so communal. There was such a spirit of community, and there always is in New York. You know what I mean? Like, even though we all act like we don't care about each other and we're fierce and no, when something happens, we are so communal. It's like really magical.
I do have to say, so we both went to school for musical theater performance here in New York City. And I went to my first post-COVID, even though we're still in it, show at the Armory last week.
I saw your post about it. I loved everything you posted about it. I felt all the feels with you.
Oh my God. I cried. I had the shivers walking into the space, and you can see it on my social, blah, blah, blah. It's saved on a thing. It's saved on a thing on my Instagram, but you can to know, to feel safe, the Park Avenue Armory here in New York on the Upper East Side did everything they possibly could. It felt so safe, so protected, so well organized. 100 audience members, all of whom were vaccinated and or tested on site, socially distanced. This unbelievable performance choreographed by Bill T. Jones, who many people know as a unbelievable choreographer, including of Spring Awakening. And it was like, I cried the second I walked into the actual space itself until the end. And it was embarrassing because I was like, thank God I'm fucking wearing a mask right now, because I'm like sobbing, just sobbing the entire time. But it was a relief. It was great.
Yeah, for sure. That's so magical and exciting. And those are the moments when you're like, whoa, those are the moments where you feel the impact of the trauma.
Oh, totally. I also remember when the news was announced that, you know, your production of Sunday in the Park was coming to London, I literally texted, I think I texted a friend of ours and was like, okay, I'm going to London, because I have like fallen in love with Paris. And I'm like, I'm thinking about going back for a while post COVID-ish next year. And I genuinely was like, I'm going to go to fucking Europe and be like, hop on a goddamn train and see Annalie. And I just, the idea of seeing you in a show, the next time I see you in a show, I'm going to be fucking sobbing.
I love you.
Sobbing.
I will be too. It's, that feels crazy to me. Like, oh my God, you know, I don't know. You know, it's, I just pray that everything goes well so that everybody gets to just come back to their theatrical spaces.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to happen. It's going to happen soon. And it's already starting to happen. There are plans already in place. And it's very exciting for those of us who know that live theater and the arts are the absolute core of New York. And, you know, for so many of us, our ability to feel and find joy. So that's fantastic. But in the meantime, we have other ways to have an outlet and experience the love. And I cannot tell you, first off, if you guys haven't seen Annalie's episode of Watch What Happens, where she's wearing a fucking vintage Cardinals jersey, I mean, that is the sign of a dedicated, when you know that the attire can connect to Sir Andrew Cohen's love of the Cardinals and all things St. Louis, that is the sign of a dedicated Bravo fan. So I have to ask you, when did your Bravo-holic journey begin?
I was watching The Housewives Orange County, like the early years. Like I've always been a reality TV person. It's always been like a really nice way for me to like unplug my brain. I love good TV, but sometimes when I watch scripted narrative, I sometimes like, it's a lot to think about and process. I'm wondering why I like it, why I like that choice, why I like the director. What, and sometimes I just like to numb out. And I feel like I really can do that with reality TV. So I used to watch all the MTV shows. Like I was really into Teen Mom. And I was really into I was really into all the like I Love New York and all those dating shows they had on VH1, I was obsessed with. I watched them all. So, and I realized too, I was doing Wicked at the time on the Broadway, like Legally Blonde and Wicked when I was doing them on Broadway. I realized when I would come home, it was when you could first start DVRing things, and I could DVR my favorite reality shows. And I always DVR'd my Bravo shows. And I really loved like numbing out on Housewives. And then at the Housewives, I remember watching right when Watch What Happened Live started. I would watch, and Jenny was on a lot.
Jenny Poulos,
yes, love her. And I was, I loved when she was on, and I loved that she did those raps. And I thought it was so funny that they kept using her raps for the intro of the show. And anyways, I've been a Bravo fan since the early days. And then when they started building on the franchises, it was like so nice. I would come home from. You got to wind down after you've done a Broadway show. You got to like kind of chill out when you get home. And it was a great way for me to like turn off my brain, wind down before I went to bed. So it was like kind of my ritual. And my husband would make fun of me at the time we were dating. I can't believe you watched this. Wah, wah, wah. And now he watches every single show with me. It's so funny.
Oh my God.
We were a little bit behind like a couple days ago. And last night I was like going to go to bed early. And he was like, we still haven't watched Top Chef this week. Like, we watch every show. Every show. So anyways, that's how I became a Bravo fan. Big, big fan for years.
Do you watch every Housewives franchise? Are there some that you kind of are like, I cannot commit to this in this scope. I need to just kind of put a pin in X, Y,
yes,
city.
Sometimes too, it depended on where I was living in the world and how I could get access to something or what was happening with my schedule. So yeah, there's a couple cities that I like. I'm like a little bit behind on, like I'm a little bit behind on Potomac, because their first season, I was living somewhere where I was in Toronto, I think, or something. And so I didn't like, you know, it's that first season I think is so important. That's why Salt Lake was so exciting this year. It was so nice to have a new city during the pandemic.
Yes.
And I felt personally like it was a success because like everything about it was like fascinating. I grew up in Colorado and Denver. So like I'm really, really familiar with Mormon culture. And I felt like they did a great job of sort of exploring the complexity of living in a Mormon culture as a Mormon or a former Mormon. There's so many like dynamics to that that are really fascinating, I personally think. So anyways, yeah, I would say I'm the most current, always in like knowledgeable about New York and Orange County because they were the OGs. And I've been with them from the beginning. Like New York, I can tell you about every single cast member that's ever been on.
I love that. Is there a spiritual housewife from any franchise who is not necessarily your favorite housewife, but of all of the franchises combined, someone that you see yourself in or you learn from that person in the, oh my God, I would never do this thing, but I sort of secretly love that they are. Is there someone that you feel yourself connected to? Doesn't have to be your favorite, but just someone that you look at and you just feel that instinctive connection?
Yeah, you know, there have been so many over the years, but I think like, oh God, like I love NeNe so much, especially those like first couple seasons with NeNe. She was so like, there was something about NeNe in those first couple seasons and always with NeNe, but like before NeNe knew she was famous. And I feel like NeNe would kill me if she knew I was saying this, but like she was so... She was so funny just in regular life. Remember those scenes with her and, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. He was what's a fashion show without fashion? Nothing.
Dwight.
Remember those scenes with her and Dwight where you'd be like, why is this is the show that I am just like, this could be a whole spinoff. But anyways, NeNe's so funny just naturally and has had such a challenging life and has just flourished despite of it and found love despite of it and took care of her sweet boy all by herself despite of it. There was like, I always loved NeNe. NeNe made me laugh so hard. And then I've always had a soft spot for Teresa because of all the terrible things she's gone through. But I also loved Caroline Manzo. I'm going through this season. And then New York.
I love it.
Like, I'll always love Bethany, even though, you know, she's such a hustler. But that's part of what I love about Bethany is, like, to talk about a hustle. And I love that she was so, like, emotionally impacted by the work that she was doing charitably. Like, I always appreciated that. You know, they all do crazy things sometimes. And even though Ramona, Joe does not agree with me. All the OGs, I always have, like, sort of, like...
Mm-hmm. A kinship.
Yeah, even though Ramona's politics are totally no, thank you. And she's been a goofball. When she fake cries, I can't help it.
Better.
Just some people I don't like actually connect with them. I just like really appreciate the television they're providing for me. But the person that I think I've really connected with and who I feel like who could I like be friends with and like who do I want to go to lunch to is Leah.
Really?
Leah to me is like calling people out but still being like open and available, and I really appreciate, here's why I feel this way about Leah,
Tell me.
She struggles with addiction. Mm-hmm. And she saw her behavior and experienced her behavior. And she said, I'm going to get sober and is counting days. And I just think that is beyond commendable in that environment, mm-hmm. especially with the group of New York women. Mm-hmm. Because I think addiction has been a major, major issue for so many of these women. And I really, really support people when they are able to acknowledge it and also mm-hmm. commit to working on addiction in that space, because it's a place where like you are encouraged to drink. It's fun to drink and let's drink. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. so anyways,
binge drinking is big on New York more than I think any other franchise. And so the tension of, you know, having been sober, which is different from not drinking. I mean, she was living a sober life for so many years.
Working the steps.
Decides. Yeah, working the steps.
I think we don't. Did she say that? Did she say?
I think so.
She is and now, but yeah.
Yeah, she is now. You know, decides privately, as she has said, prior to joining the show, she decides she wants to start drinking again. Starts drinking again a couple months before filming her first season. Films her first season, participates in the binge drinking and everything associated with that when you're, you know, a New York specific housewife, and then decides, you know, I don't feel comfortable doing this anymore. I want to go back to the sober kind of life that I had, but I'm still filming this show. So I have changed my behavior, the ways that I want to live specific to drinking, but everyone else aside from Lou has not. There is a natural tension of that, which we don't really necessarily see discussed specific to Leah, but I do think it's a fascinating watch.
I think it's so important, and I think it's so important that, you know, it's one thing to be like, I'm not drinking, and it's another thing for her to be like, Lou, I think this is not helping you having this fake rosé. It's so important mm-hmm. because she's also like talking about her day count and mm-hmm. talking about, I just think it's awesome that she's talking about program, because there's been people that mm-hmm. gotten sober, but I don't think they really talk about program that much. And like, that is, I am curious if she worked the program before when she was sober before or not, but, mm-hmm. but what, who cares? Doesn't matter. It's mm-hmm. like she is now. And I think that's really beautiful and important. And it's funny because I go, would we be best friends? I honestly don't know if there's anybody, maybe you can think of somebody. I don't think there's ever been anybody on the Housewives that I'm really like, mostly because you know who I'm more like? Oh my God, I'm blanking on her name. Dallas, who's best friends with Brandy, blonde hair, and her husband.
Stephanie Holman.
I'm more like Stephanie. I'm kind of like Stephanie. You know, like I have a really hard time having conflict with people. I cry really easily. It's a big deal for me to like confront somebody. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I'm who would I like want to go like hang out with? Probably like Leah, because I think like I love how she calls everybody out on their political mm-hmm. like unawareness too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She feels like the first person of our generation to be a housewife. Like, mm-hmm. The kind of people that we went to college with and who are, mm-hmm. you know, trying to make it in New York and make the world a better place and make sure their kids are socially like aware and progressive. Mm-hmm. And, but Stephanie, I think I'm probably more like her in personality. Like I would not make good. I think she's great in on the show. I love her, mm-hmm. but I think you have to have a peacemaker and somebody who doesn't like to stir the pot. That's important. And so she's that mm-hmm. on the show. And I think I would be that too.
I love that. And I love the comparison to, you know, Leah and also what we're watching play out on New York, even this past week. I have this thing called Satchels of Gold on Andy's Girls, which are listener thoughts and feels, questions, whatever, in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Killorn Ben Simone's triumphant turn on Scary Island. And I got a satchel from an AG, Heather, who had a really succinct way of sort of diagnosing what we watched on the most recent episode, which felt a little strategic, shall we say, of Leah introducing this conflict against Heather, someone she doesn't actually have any conflict against, but just sort of trying to introduce some kind of tension that came across as a bit too maybe like heavily constructed. And Heather said something that I thought was really interesting, which was Leah's afraid of not being entertaining sober. Like that could be a potentially a reason and a tension for why, you know, she's going so hard on this Heather thing. There could be something in the back of her head that's thinking, okay, people fell in love with me last year because of me, but also because of my antics, the tiki torches, everything else, which happened when I was binge drinking. I'm no longer binge drinking. I still want to be someone who's bringing drama. Maybe Heather in her head, subconsciously, it doesn't necessarily need to be a conscious choice, so I think it was. Maybe in her head, she was thinking, okay, this will be the thing. This will be the thing that I bring because I'm choosing to live a sober life. Do you not totally tell me to go fuck myself? Totally disagree with me. Tell me.
I actually think like, I think she's more organic than that. While I do think, okay. So here's why. I think that Heather, that was super shady of Heather to do. And then she comes on the show and is like, hey, yeah, I want to be on camera so I can get some followers for my, mm-hmm. for my things that I'm trying to sell for my businesses. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'll mm-hmm. that'd be great. If Bravo can have me on for a couple more episodes, that'd be fantastic. In the meantime, she talks so much shit. There's one thing that I do like about Leah is she holds people accountable. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. while yes, I hear you. I think Leah's so much cooler than that. Leah could be not interesting and do nothing this season. I still think that mm-hmm. she would have grounds to come back because she's been interesting enough and she's there. I feel like they had to change the dynamic and she changed it sort of on accident. I don't think they mm-hmm. meant for her to change the dynamic that much. And mm-hmm. she really like turned it on its head. And mm-hmm. I also feel like from a person in program perspective, I'm not a person mm-hmm. in program, but I'm a person who participates in Al-Anon, and mm-hmm. I just don't see that being her angle. I do see her being like, I didn't like this, and her being and probably talking to the producers about like, why is that? Why is she coming? She's kind of can be such a dick. And they're like, you know, she did a podcast and did blah, blah, blah. And Leah was like, yeah, what the fuck's up with that? I don't see her being like, how, Ramona? Yes. How can I be more relevant? How can I be more relevant?
Luann.
Sonia? Yes. How can I be more relevant? Luann? Mm-hmm. How can I be more relevant? Yes, yes, and yes. Leah, I think it's more like, what am I going to wear? Because I have access to this amazing designer who needs mm-hmm. a platform and needs somebody to see their work. And I love it. And I don't think she's there yet. I don't think she'll ever be that kind of person. How about I guess I really love Leah a lot.
I am so into this.
Yeah.
I am so into this.
I'm super, I really respect her journey with sobriety. Mm-hmm. And I also like respect her mental health journey mm-hmm. and the way that she started out that day and was like, mm-hmm. I feel fucking crazy because I have a really mm-hmm. intense thing happening in my personal life. So I'm basically lashing out at people. So mm-hmm. I'm going to be silent. And part of me was like, another housewife, this would be a ploy to get attention, to literally mm-hmm. not talk. But, mm-hmm. but also like part of getting airtime is you talking.
You know, right.
So that was kind of yeah. fabulous. And then she was like, this is getting too hard. So I'm just going to drop it. And I've calmed down. The whole reason mm-hmm. she did it was to calm down. So she did it. And then that night, I really do think, yes, she planned on bringing it up, but she talked about it. But I also think she was authentically like disgruntled. Like you're going to talk all this shit and then act like nothing's wrong. You know, like if you're going to talk shit about people on their podcast, on your podcast, mm-hmm. and then you better get ready to back it up, or just help somebody you have a problem with them. That's sort of the whole thing, is like about being transparent and showing. And Heather showed up like, yes.
Hey, mama.
Yeah. And the way that she responded. And yeah, I just thought it was very strange. I thought Heather's appearance kind of made me sad too. I felt sad for her. I was like, I don't know. It just felt a little off, because I always kind of liked her, but she's a hustler. She like wanted to be Bethany. I always felt Heather did.
I mean, she kind of was in a different industry.
Yeah.
I mean, in her own way. I mean, she had her hustle. She's an entrepreneur. I think that's why she connected with Josh so much, yes, more than Kristen. It's like she understands, yeah, the way to do a hustle.
She's a good business.
Yeah, she is. It was the timing of this. Like, I wonder how that conversation happened. I do not in any way think that Heather was like, ding, 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 like, hello, Susan, producer, I'd love to come back. I think that they approached her, but I wonder what her strategy and thinking was coming back. And if she, it appeared to me that she did not in any way expect the environment that she walked into.
Yeah.
Which is interesting considering she knows these women and isn't necessarily in love with them.
Which she,
so what
made
did
public.
She expect?
Yeah, that was right. Very strange to me. So that's also why, like, that's why I didn't feel like, I hear you with most housewives. They'd be like, oh, mm-hmm, I'm so over this, like, calculating. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show up with the thing. Mm-hmm. And with Leah, it was sort of like, okay. Because I felt like she was just being like, I'm calling you out on this. Like, what? Why are you here if you hate, mm-hmm, these people? Mm-hmm. That's what it felt
no,
like
I think
to me.
I think you're totally right. And there is something about the strategy behind performing deception or revenge that is seen on different franchises in totally different vibes. And what I loved about the Jersey reunion, for example, was the idea that Jen Aiden came into that reunion,
oh my God,
ready to bury Margaret, or more likely fuck with her as much as she possibly. She said that to the camera before the reunion started, like, I am here to fuck with Margaret Josephs. And then
so gross.
Did so gross, but also she did it with such relish that Jennifer Aiden, someone who I couldn't stand her first season, I look at her and I'm like, I might disagree with you so much, but you are enjoying the fuck out of this. And there is a vibe on New Jersey of these women who can scream at each other. And then a couple minutes later, like, Jackie is screaming at Teresa. And then a couple minutes later, she's like, I just want you to say that you didn't have any, like, grounds for this. And Teresa's like, yeah, no, duh, I didn't. I thought, have I not told you that? Like, I 100% didn't. And then Jackie just takes a moment, steps back, and she's like, that's all I wanted. The fact that they can go from zero to a million and then find some sort of neutral sigh of relief around 50, you know, zero to 100, they find it around 50. It's kind of great high energy TV. I came out of that reunion and I was like, I am incredibly satisfied.
I mean, we love Jersey. I forever. Like, I watched the first season and had my jaw on the floor, like, the whole season. And also, remember, it was like, didn't Teresa get her boobs that first season? Remember, her body
bubs.
Looked so different.
Yeah,
her bubbies. But yeah, so I felt, it was like, it's so funny too, because Teresa does like the same thing she always does, where she can't like cop up for anything. And then at, mm-hmm, some point she finally does. And Andy, mm-hmm, has to, like, help her get there and help explain to her what she needs to do. You know, it's, mm-hmm, amazing. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's always, like when I was on Watch What Happens Live, I remember saying something funny about, like the Housewives is about sort of forgiveness. Like, that's one of, mm-hmm, the themes. And if you can't let things go and you can't forgive things with somebody and you can't figure out how to move on, then you're usually not going to come back. So, like, Hannah from Summer House, when I read that she was like leaving, I was not, mm-hmm, surprised, because she could not take accountability for any of her behavior. And she couldn't just be like, I'm sorry, let's move on. But when she did, it was very Ramona. It was very like performative and, mm-hmm, like fake crying. And gosh, I'm really going there about, I really feel comfortable.
I am so into this.
But do you know what I mean? I kind of wanted to like hug this. Her and be like, just take a deep breath and just like have some accountability for some of the things you did. You can watch them back. That's always so interesting when people watch something back and they don't see how they could be in the wrong. I think I loved Dorinda. I thought Dorinda was so funny. I love Dorinda's fashion. She's one of those people that's so, so quick-witted off the top of her head. Mm. And I love how she kept people in check. But that last season especially, she had a really hard time just being like, you know, I was in the wrong here. And she, and then she would say she was in the wrong and say she'd move on. And then she wouldn't. And she'd keep bringing it back up. And especially at a reunion, if you can't like move on, it's been a while. It's that, I think that to me was why she didn't get asked back, in my personal opinion. Because I would have
completely
loved to have seen Dorinda. And also I think people, the combination of alcohol and and filming, like a lot of times too, if you can't acknowledge that like you drank too much, like that's one thing that Sonia's really good about, being like, yeah, I got way too wasted last night. I'm sorry. If people tell her that she was wrong, she'll go, okay. Sometimes I think on these shows, it doesn't go well for people when somebody says, you got really drunk and you did this thing. And they're like, no, I didn't. And then they watch the tape and they're still like, no, I didn't. No, it's very. So anyways, that's kind of. God, I could go on and on. I'm rambling. Sorry.
No, you're not rambling. This is so wonderful. And I think, you know, in terms of forgiveness and figuring out a way to move forward, I felt that in New Jersey, noting that there's still obvious tension. But the fact that, you know, Andy's, you know, Jackie is saying to Teresa in a way that felt very natural and organic, like, I don't think you like me. I don't know where to go from here. And Teresa essentially immediately says, you know what, when Evan was talking about golfing, I was thinking how great would it be if, you know, Louie and Evan could get together for golf. When that happened, I was like, this is, listen, there are obviously problems here. There's obviously movement and abilities for people to grow and learn more about each other and themselves. But that's also something that Teresa would not have done, I would say, two seasons ago.
I totally
agree. Certainly season three and four. Like, that was, to me, a remarkable step forward.
I totally agree. It's amazing. And the other thing, like, it felt organic. Like, with Jen, I'm glad to hear your take on Jen, because I was like, I love Margaret so much. So
same.
I was, like, 100%. Super grouchy with Jen after the reunion. I was like, oh, and I love Bill. And I also feel like, it is a little, it makes me a little like, why is she drinking tequila like that at these things? You know, you're on camera. There's, even if you weren't on camera, there's like 60 people at this party. Also, how'd they do that? There's a lot of testing. I mean, it's so interesting.
Jersey has an asterisk next to it. That's like, don't worry about it.
I know.
Just enjoy the season.
Oh my God. Right. But I just was frustrated with the way that she came at Marge, because Margaret, because I just felt like it didn't feel organic sometimes. It felt like she planned it. So it's good to hear your take that she was like, this is what I'm doing. This is my objective in the scene, you know?
Yeah. And I disagreed with everything that essentially everything that she said, but I enjoyed the fact that she was having fun. And poor Marge, who I love Margaret. I love Margaret Josephs. But her, you know, she was genuinely, sincerely, seriously triggered by Jen in some points, but also flustered and frustrated, because she's like, shut the fuck up. Like, I know that you know that this is bullshit and I'm pissed about it. And watching those two sort of just lose their minds, one of whom doing so based on strategy, the other of whom is genuinely strategically being triggered by this person saying shitty, dumb things that I think both of them know aren't true.
Like, and dumb.
Jen Aiden saying, Margaret, you started the rumor because you have driven through Tenafly once in your life. It's so obviously ludicrous, but it was also
entertaining.
Very funny. It was
I know.
Very
also,
entertaining.
You know, anytime Marge lives in the world of like to me why I also love her. She lives in like a Nene, Bethany. Mm-hmm. Not, she's not like that, but what mm-hmm. she does is when they get cornered, mm-hmm. the way they come back is, I am not that great with my words. Like in terms of being like quick witted, nasty back. It's mm-hmm. so entertaining to watch because like, if you wrote that, people will be like, that's not real. You know what I mean?
100%.
But there, I do feel like that, like Marge has that kind of quick witted quib. Like she'll come back and say something really mean. That's really crazy and funny, but really, really smart and quick. You know, the way that Nene would be like, chompers, you know, and you'd be like, what?
And I think a lot of that was a survival instinct. Yes. Was because she was essentially parenting herself. She was in situations where she didn't necessarily feel safe or protected or secure. She needed to figure out what her weapon would be, and she was able to weaponize her mind in a really self-protective way, a positive way in which to survive and defend herself. Yes. And protect herself, and also get rewards. You know, in many ways, I think one of the reasons that she's on New Jersey is specifically because of that Bethany alpha, smart, witty, sharp humor. And you think about how the ways in which that humor was formed, which we're seeing in her talking about her book and reflecting on her life and her relationship with her mom. And it's been used really well. And it's also gotten her into positions where she almost kind of like is flustered, you know, blustered, you know, all of those kind of ideas of her words and her sharpness almost working against her because she's so filled at some points as yes. a reaction with only sharp that yes. she's like, I don't even know how to express the anger and rage I feel about what Jen is saying and about everything else. And the conflict even in her mind and in her instincts is wildly interesting to me.
And it's so funny because those three women, Nene, Bethany, and mm-hmm. Margaret, they all had challenging childhoods where yes. where comedy has mm-hmm. always been a way for them to not only laugh at the situation, but mm-hmm. also hold the room, mm-hmm. find power, defend mm-hmm. themselves. And mm-hmm. they're so smart. All three of them mm-hmm. are extremely smart women. To be funny, you have to be smart. And to be mm-hmm. quick-witted, you have to be smart. And to be sharp with your language, you have to be so smart. Mm-hmm. And all three of them are, I think, lend a flavor from wherever they originated, mm-hmm. you know, and that wherever they came from really comes out in those moments. And they're just mm-hmm. so, so funny. So that's why it's really fun to watch them spar with people, even though it may not be fun for them. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, like, remember when, like, Nene's, I think, first reunion with Kim. Oh, my God, that flow that she had. You're like, oh, my God, it was like, you couldn't write it. It was so funny. She's so quick, hilarious. And Bethany has had a bunch of those, too. You know, it's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And Nene is the reason that reunions exist in the ways that they do, where it's really a call to reaction and a call to response and reply. And that happened because Nene was really pissed about the episodes and shit that Kim was saying. And she said that she wanted a platform to respond. So that was the very first reunion, to my memory, if my recall is correct from the history of the Housewives of it all, that is how the reunions functioned. And I think it's because Nene knew, I can absolutely not only take you on, but seek and destroy. And if you give me the time and the platform to do it, I will bury you. And it's the close your legs to married men. It's the all of these little gifts that she's given us all came from Nene knowing I am smarter than you. I am funnier than you. You may be funny, but in a different way. The funny that I have requires incredible intelligence and nuance and instinct, and she knew that she could deliver it, and she gave us the gift that continues past her time on Housewives.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is amazing. I do have to just ask you one quick question about Teresa. So you have expressed appreciation for her, which I have now developed through the years. How did you navigate Strippergate seasons 3 and 4 when she was very unaware. Well, I mean, it actually doesn't matter that she was unaware. When she was out to ruin
Melissa Gorga. Oh my God. Yeah. And I also,
how did you navigate that? That was a dark time, I think, for Jersey.
Oh, super dark time. Yeah, Teresa had some really dark times during the franchise. So I would sort of think of my relationship with the Housewives as like old friends.
Yes.
So like I didn't love how Kyle came off last season in Beverly Hills too.
100%, 100%.
But she's like, you know, when you have really good old friends and they're going through something, they're going through a phase. Kind of sort of the way that I look at it, like, oh, they're going through a season. Like, this is a season where they're like coming off not so great, but I still like love them and they're my old friend. Like, I still love them because I know where they came from. With Teresa, I always loved her, even when she was in that little era where she was like kind of big for her britches and she was felt like she was the star of the show and she didn't want the spotlight taken away from her. That's kind of what that era felt like. Right. Mm-hmm. Kind of like it's been a while.
Yeah,
but
you're completely right.
But I always thought her home life was more complicated and more fraught and she was unhappy. And like my mom kind of always says it the best. She's always like, even when she does dumb things and she's not very nice to people that I love, I just can't help it. I just love Teresa. And now that she's gone through this horrific experience, when she came back from jail, I remember I cried. You know, when they have that shot of her getting to see the girls and they run to her.
Oh my God. With the straight hair. Oh my God. Everything. She, like, everything.
Become a yogi. Sobbing.
Oh my God. So into it.
So mad at Joe Giudice. Giudice. What are we saying now? I can't remember.
I call him Joe Giudice, Giudice, Giudice. Did I say all three? It's a trio. It's a trio. They change per the season. Like, some of us change our hair. He changes the pronunciation of his name.
I mean, I'm totally happy that he's doing better and he looks better and he looks healthier. And I think that Italy is a better place for him to be in general for him. But we as a family, as a household, we're still really resentful of him doing that to Teresa. Like,
oh yeah, he's a piece of shit.
And we love that every time that they say his name, that the editors cut to do it for him. Come close to the mic.
When she comes, is my fucking bitch wife. She's sick.
We got a little impersonation there, which I was.
Every time it happens, Joe pauses and goes, "Oh, I love it," because we do need to be reminded that, like,
yeah.
Teresa was in a horrific, horrific home life situation. And I love that she's so protective of him for the girls. Even though I wish she could be a little less, more protective with, you know, like Joe and Melissa. Sometimes you're like, and I totally get why Gia is like, Joe and Melissa, my Uncle Joe and Aunt Melissa should not be talking about my dad. There is something really important about protecting your kid's relationship with your ex when you have a divorce. So I really, like, I think that's fantastic. But man, oh man, the Strippergate stuff, you were like, Teresa, stop doing this. That's what you felt like. You were like, no, it was a dark time in there. It was a dark time in that show's history. Remember, they tried to like completely change it up and
it did not go
well. And now we're back on track. So fabulous. Marge was a great addition. And I love Bill. Jen is not my favorite though. You've helped me see some like insight into why. Sometimes I'm like, girl, just chill.
Yeah. But she's like a little bit of a hyper puppy. And you know, the puppy is gonna, you know, it's excited. It's excited to be here. And her stuff with her parents, can't help but love it.
Totally. Her stuff with her parents, I think, is an interesting storyline. That's really fascinating. I loved hearing more about that. And it also gave me more empathy for her too. And I saw her that to me. I like to see Jen in those situations and I love to see her cooking and I love to see her like parenting, not just giving them those what we love about reality TV and what works best on Housewives is when it's the most organic. So that's probably why like we so often see Leah on New York being really organic. So that's probably why it felt sort of out of place for her to be reading something off of her phone, like reading an article off of her phone.
That's a great point, too. And I think with Teresa, I mean, it's such a full circle moment where Teresa at one point says, like, you know, don't in this reunion cycle, you know, don't speak out or don't speak badly about the family. There is a pause and a tension where Joe Gorga is like, oh, my God, how do I respond to this? What do I do? And then she goes, just kidding. I mean, that never would have happened. 5, 6, 7. That is a huge, I don't know that people understand what a huge fucking moment that is, that even if she probably did feel a certain way about what he said during the reunion, the fact that she could even joke about it, which is a reference to the fact that she could never let things go, is unbelievable. That also is a huge sign of progress.
It also makes me so excited to get to know Louis. And it also makes me so happy that Joe Gorga is out of the picture. I mean, Joe Giudice is out of the picture for Joe Gorga, Melissa Gorga, and Teresa. Him being out of their life is so much healthier for their family. And like when they scream and cry, like he took my parents away. Mm-hmm. The trauma that that family experienced because of him being really selfish. And him still, he does take accountability for it. You know, we see him like say sorry and stuff, but he's just like, there's an energy about him that just can't, I'm happy he's not in their life.
I completely agree. And I think when it comes to organic moments, just transitioning to Beverly Hills, there were so many organic moments on this episode, for better or worse.
Yes.
Kathy Hilton, the love of my life.
New star.
New star. Who knew? New star.
Who knew?
I mean, I hate to say it, but like, I kind of knew. I've been asking for Kathy Hilton for, I didn't know she was as kooky as she is,
right?
But I knew that she would bring a different energy, and she is giving me literally everything that I have ever needed in my entire life. And I'm glad that she is a part of this now, because it would have been Giudice levels of darkness had she joined or participated in the show during the Kyle v. Kim era, even some of the seasons that followed. The fact that she is here with Kyle and not with Kyle and Kim,
it's great.
Where their dynamic would have been probably a little murky, possibly, is so good and so funny, and it shows Kyle in such a positive way.
Yes, I agree. It's so fun. It feels really like there's an air of like pandemic time that's kind of magic about it, because it's like, oh, well, she finally said yes. You know what I mean? Like, because she's chilling in the pandemic and she wanted to see her sister too. You know what I mean? I love it. And I love like, I can't wait to see what happens, but I can't wait to see how she handles whoever was, who was saying mean things about Paris.
Oh my God, who was? Obviously wasn't Kyle, wasn't Garcelle, wasn't
it was Garcelle. Oh, it was Garcelle. And you can see Kathy like, are you really talking shit about my daughter this way? Like this. But I love how kooky she is. You never imagine her being so kooky, and she's so not stuffy. And and I just am really happy to see Kyle like just getting to not be so fraught. And I love Kyle's like an old friend too. Like last season it was like, oh man. And also we waited behind Kyle to see Santa when Jack was like 3 months old.
Oh my God.
She was in front of us in line, and we didn't say like, we love you, Kyle, or anything like that. Cause I don't get starstruck with like my favorite famous, you know, movie stars and stuff. I get really starstruck with, Bravo celebrities. And like, I was really weird to Melissa and Joe on a red carpet of a movie I was in. They were super freaked out by me. But so we didn't say anything to her, but she was such a doll to us, and like so sweet about Jack and precious. And Portia was so cute and sweet and had a friend. God. Anyways, I'll always like take that moment too as like when you see people in real life and how they behave in real life and to service people in real life. She was so precious to all the people that were working at the Grove. And anyways, the point is I love Kyle. So I'm really happy to see her having sort of a warmer, she gets to just be like, the role that she always was all along, like you guys, like calling people out on stuff and being strong. Like remember her that with that first season with Camille, she was like totally flabbergasted, and she doesn't take shit, but she's also like, doesn't want to be in a fight with people, which I appreciate. and we'll say sorry.
I completely agree. I think this season of Beverly Hills is going to be incredible. I was very nervous going in that the Erica of it all would take everything over. Yeah. But it I watched this week's episode and was like, wow, I feel fucking wonderful about the dynamics that we're seeing, the friendships that we're seeing. I mean, Garcelle had her own You're Such a Fucking Liar, Camille, with Rinna, where she was like, just so you're aware, I'm not going to pretend everything's okay. And I also have experienced as a Black woman the trauma of ugly stereotypes being foisted upon me without my permission that I have had to fight against. And a part of that has been an uncomfortable feeling that people have about Black women experiencing and expressing anger. And the fact that she is saying, I'm getting on top of that, I am allowing myself to feel displeasure about you, and I'm allowing myself to communicate that and to continue to hold you accountable, and I'm not going to allow you to just walk away from this and pretend that we've tied it in a bow. Like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I never thought that last week's episode would be such a great learning vehicle about race relations, race experience on Beverly Hills, not just through, you know, I knew that Garcelle was going to come and bring some teaching moments this season because she's so smart and fierce. And like, you can't have a season after this year and not have teaching moments. Like I knew she was going to have to school people about their language and, and then I'm blanking on her name, but
Crystal,
when she, that holy moment shit. Where
Sutton
goes, no, we're not doing this. And you were like, oh, okay. I see you, Sutton. I thought you were this person, but possibly in your beliefs and thoughts about politics and the world. And her, to me, the way that Sutton was so defensive, so immediately, like, oh, you're in that, like, you are white fragility in a nutshell, sitting on this counter in that response. Like, that response was white fragility, in my opinion.
Completely. And also, Sutton is like an avowed Democrat, progressive donor, yada yada. And oh, so noting that, yeah, which makes it all honestly all the more fascinating because she does not understand what's going on. And she is so immediately defensive. And to compare what we won't know of what Crystal was about to express about her own experience tying into what Garcelle was saying.
She didn't even finish.
And the problem for me is, okay, so from now on, we will never know what Crystal was going to say because it's all going to be discussed through the lens of, and Sutton interrupted you. You know, like we're never going to get that pure moment back, which is unfortunate. But what we've seen on social.
Yeah, what happened? Did Sutton put out a statement?
Sutton put out a statement and Crystal responded to it. And it's not in my place to, you know, mazel or forgive Sutton for something that has truly nothing to do with me. It would be irresponsible for me to frame it in that way. I did think it was very well written. I'm gonna grab it right quick because Sutton and Crystal responded to it shortly thereafter. Sutton said, despite Crystal and my strained relationship at the time, it was disrespectful to interrupt her and not listen to her express her truth. My life is blessed by the diversity of my relationships, and I'm committed to become a better listener, to understand the painful realities experienced by people of color. I am sorry. I will do better and be better. And then Crystal, a few hours later, responded and said, thank you, Sutton. Your apology means a lot to me, and I'm sure it means a lot to many others with similar lived experiences. Asian Americans are often expected not to share their opinions, but despite this stereotype, I believe that everyone deserves to be heard. I consciously rewired myself to be outspoken and share my feelings whenever possible, and I encourage my children to do the same. Now that my platform has grown, I feel I have a duty to speak up for others who don't yet feel safe using their own voices. Listening to one another and validating our different experiences and perspectives are how we will all grow as individuals and as a society. Thank you for that commitment, Sutton.
Okay, that was how you respond.
Amen. So that, like, that will never be better than this.
No.
It will never be better.
How about to saying I have a lot to learn is like all we want to hear as people who want. So like, I always just think like, what would I want to say as a parent, and what would I want to say? Mm-hmm. What would I want my kid to say? Or, you know, and I just feel like this is a year where we're learning a lot about being humans and mm-hmm. about how we weren't so good at being humans mm-hmm. before this happened. Mm-hmm. And so this is just like another one of those sort of examples of how when people poo-poo reality television, you're like, actually, there's a lot of possibility for people to grow from watching a reality mm-hmm. show. And also mm-hmm. it's really important for women around the country to seek ourselves insight and to see Crystal's mm-hmm. insight and also see Sutton's mm-hmm. insight and how she can respond mm-hmm. to something and then learn from it. You know, that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. So while I just said that was an example of white fragility, yes, it is. But her response to it is how you learn from that and how you change that and how you get out of that sort of mm-hmm. box that you've been sitting in. So anyways, that's positive. See, now when people can have growth on social media, I'm always relieved too, because the thing that happened with Tiffany Moon and Cameron,
such
oh
a
my
mess.
God. And why did her husband say that too? Mm-hmm. That crazy thing that he said, it was just sort of like, no, you don't keep the fight going. You make up mm-hmm. and you let it go. And then you don't keep it going on social media, y'all. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel.
I completely agree. And I was so happy to see both of these women use their voices in ways that hopefully inspire all of us to do better and learn more. And listen, it's happening on Beverly Hills and it's happening on Beverly Hills. I'm just like, it made me, you know, the end of the episode, obviously I was like, oh God, this is bad. But they were both able, not both able. Crystal is stepping into her power as a real housewife and using her platform to speak about her own experiences and the ways in which she wants to use her voice. And Sutton is understanding the complications that can happen when you behave in a manner that is really really complicated and problematic. And if housewives and this platform and people saying to her this was not good enable her to not only become better and force her to possibly listen without immediately being reactive and defensive, and also propel forward, you know, an interesting and possibly complicated friendship or relationship, and we're watching it play out, I think this is what we need to see. This is the ways in which this conversation should happen. And it's a reminder of all that went wrong on Dallas, but also all that can go right in BH.
And also what's going to happen with OC. Because could you imagine this same conversation with people on the OC?
No, I can't.
Oh, because you don't watch. You don't watch OC.
I didn't watch the season because honestly, I don't participate in any boycott of anything having to do with Bravo. It's just not for me. I think if you in any way feel or experience pleasure or learn something about yourself from watching, you should watch literally whatever you want. There's so much that's been taken away from us that I would never recommend someone holding something back. You know what I'm saying? But I didn't watch it because I can't take Kelly Dodd.
And oh, my God.
It would have been a trigger
for you too, because she was just like out of control. She was it felt like Kelly Dodd to me this season was like, I'm the star of the show. I'm standing in the middle. She was very extra. I'm sure you've heard, but also like, no, I can't, you know, so many things, but I'm afraid Kelly Dodd's going to come after me now.
No, she won't. She's too busy, unfortunately, drinking some wine with Jackie in the Hamptons, which you guys can watch on social because Jackie posted a delightful photo. Yeah, I posted a photo of it on Instagram and the caption was like, Evan, I'm afraid of things that will ruin my reputation. Also, Evan. And then it's just the photo of the four of them on a double date in the Hamptons this week. Annalie Ashford, before we go, you know I die for you. You know I'm obsessed with you. You know that you were my college RA and you killed it. And you were amazing. And I've known you for only 6 or 7 years because we're both in our spiritual mid-20s. Can you tell me a little bit about what is happening with the illustrious, the man of Hollywood, Ryan Murphy's American Crime Story impeachment? Because I'm dying to know. This is so exciting. You are a Tony winner. You are a movie star. You are a TV dynamo. And every time you are a part of these amazing prestige projects, a part of my heart goes bigger and bigger, because everyone that knows you knows that you are as close to the perfect person as one could aspire. You are so talented and so lovely and kind. And guys, she has been like that since we first met, again, 6 years ago, if you're doing math, when we were freshmen and students in college. And I just am so thrilled that you are a part of this. And just tell me all that you can.
You're so sweet. I love you. Okay, so I can't tell you very much because it's Ryan Murphy's show. So we have to be like, so tight-lipped, which is also so fabulous. But I will say that I have a prosthetic nose and I wear four different wigs. And or maybe, is it three? Or four? I think maybe the only three wigs. And Paula Jones.
All at once.
All at once. Wig is a hat. And Paula Jones also had braces at one point.
She did
during a major part of these sort of like trial situation for her. Yeah. So that's kind of when they were bringing the case to the Supreme Court, she had braces.
Oh my God. It was amazing. Love that for her.
The Republican Party really, like, quiet Republican donors paid for all of her legal fees and for her makeover. Mm-hmm. So that has been super fascinating. And I will tell you that Beanie Feldstein, who's playing Monica Lewinsky, looks incredible. I never act with anybody. Except for Judith Light plays a legal advisor for me. And my husband is played by Taron Killen. He's amazing.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's fantastic. So the three of us are sort of doing our own weird little show by ourselves. And we're always like, how's it going with the other part of the show? And Sarah Paulson is playing Linda Tripp, and she looks unbelievable also. And Clive Owen is playing Bill Clinton, and it's crazy how much he looks and sounds like Bill Clinton. And Edie Falco is playing Hillary, and she's just the fiercest. I just, all four of them, you know, are just unbelievable. And then I get to hang out with Judith and Taron, and we just laugh, and I get to watch the two of them be geniuses. It's very exciting. So that's what I can tell you. Everybody's really, really good at acting, and it's really, I hope that people enjoy it, and I hope that, just like the other two seasons of American Crime Story, you know, it's shown such a light on where we are and how far we've not come. So I think this will be such an interesting sort of parallel. And sort of, I always think that his seasons of this show are like an act of social justice in a way, or shining light on something we could have done better.
I love that. And also, Sarah Paulson is such a Bravo-holic.
I know.
What do you do if you film with her? Heather,
I know. We just have Linda Tripp and Paula Jones. Let's like never cross paths. I don't ever cross paths with Monica. The only person I ever cross paths with is Bill Clinton for one deposition. So I haven't gotten to sit and talk Housewives with her.
I need to see that happen. I need to see the two of you on Watch What Happens. Like, be shooting so fun. The shit. Oh my God, I would die for it. Watch What Happens, if you're listening, please make this happen when you guys do press, because it would be unbelievable. Annalee Ashford, you're so incredible. You know I love you. You know I die for you. I am so thrilled that you came on Andy's Girls. Tell the people how they can follow you and support you and everything.
You can follow me on Instagram. My name's just Annalee Ashford. Ashford, A-N-N-A-L-E-I-G-H, Ashford, A-S-H-F-O-R-D. That's the thing that I use the most. And I make weird recipes, and I'm a WW ambassador. So I like make lots of weird food and try to be body positive and love yourself and meditate. And I post weird things.
I love that. And guys, if you haven't listened to Annalise sing or perform, and there are videos of her and performances on her Instagram page, run the fuck over there, because she is like a quadruple threat, and being an avowed Bravoholic, an esteemed Bravoholic, is one of those four. Follow me on Instagram while you're there at Dame Gally. Join the Andy's Girls Patreon, patreon.com/Andy's Girls, where you get exclusive bonus episodes and enable me to buy more shoes, which is really my goal in life, plus rent. patreon.com/Andy's Girls. Annalie, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. I love you so much.
I love you so much, and I can't wait for you to come back, because we need to do a deep dive on Dallas alone. My God, the Stephanie Holman of it. I need another masterclass in your thoughts. Guys, hope you are all staying safe, staying sane. Get vaccinated if you can, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.